this most kidding little families with only 5 or 6 children do with themselves?
They're instant priorities. You know you have to protect them and provide for them.
Hey, you've given me a massive headache.
It doesn't take a village to raise a child. It takes an army.
The hospital made us take it home.
We'll look back on moments like these as the happiest in our lives.
It Takes a Parent, brought to you by Matt's Cookies. They're just like homemade cookies with real ingredients. Now also available through Peapod Delivery Service. You can meet Betsy's sponsors at betsysblog.com.
So this week, coming up, is National Teacher Appreciation Week. I should say it's actually next week, but we're getting ready for it now at my school. So it's the 4th to the 8th, but I've already got all the information that's come home with my two youngsters, and boy, there's just a lot in store for these teachers. So on the first day of the week, each teacher will receive a bouquet of flowers. Please have your children bring 3 flowers for the vases. Second day, teachers will receive a booklet of student worksheets describing what they love most about their class. Day 3, blank reading cards and envelopes selected by the students will be presented to their teachers. Day 5, it goes on, or 4, the teacher's going to get something from the classroom, a special board game that they can use. And on Friday, it's a special appreciation day and a luncheon, and I'm supposed to send in money and greeting cards we choose and envelopes and this worksheet my kids are supposed to do. And on it goes. Oh, I love this one. On the Monday when we bring the 3 flowers, the flowers may be taken from your garden if you wish. Is if I have time to grow these flowers because I'm so busy doing all this other stuff to appreciate the teachers at my school. Now, if I sound a little grumpy, here's the reason. The reason I don't have any flowers in my garden right now is because the property taxes that I have to pay are so staggeringly horrific. I do not understand why these teachers are not having a parent appreciation day for these incredibly great jobs that they have. Don't get me wrong. I like my kids' teachers. I think they're pretty good. I pretty much try to stay out of their way. They stay out of mine. We all get along really well. They do a fine job. No problems, no complaints. I like my kids' teachers. It's pretty easy for a teacher to please me. I'm not a helicopter parent. I'm not in the school every other day demanding why aren't they doing this or that. I figure they're professionals. They know what they're doing. I sort of monitor it a little bit at home. But I trust these people. We're in a good school. They know what they're doing. But come on. Do we have to spend this entire week doing all of this stuff? I mean, what is this? How many other employees get a week of appreciation like this? And then there's Christmas presents, and there's beginning of the year gifts, and there's other teacher appreciation things, and end of the year appreciation. And I'm sorry, they have one of the cushiest jobs that I know of. And I realize I'm probably offending some teachers out there, but hey, come on, let's be serious. Now, maybe if you're teaching in a really tough inner city school district, it's different. But I got to tell you where mine is, it doesn't get easier. And please, it's a great work day. You're out by 3:30 or 4. You get several months off a year paid. But here's the thing, and this is when people complain, oh, teachers only make, $75,000 a year, which is what it is on average in my school district. Give me a break. And, of course, the benefits are gold-plated. Here's what drives me completely crazy. They can't lose their jobs. If they could lose their jobs and everything else they said, I would listen to. But once you tell me that you've got a fabulous job, and we've got a couple of elementary school teachers in my school that are making over 6 figures, gold-plated benefits and pensions, and by the way, it's a big problem in our economy right now, is these municipalities are going under because they've got to pay teacher and police pensions. And you cannot lose that job, which is one reason I'm paying such high property taxes, is because there's no competition. You can't lose that job. No wonder people are lining up for these jobs, literally lining up for them, because they can't be cushier. If you're teaching second grade or fourth grade in my school district, you've got it as good as it gets. So the idea that all of this effort has to be gone to build up these teachers and to appreciate them, give me a break. you know, fine, you know, great, I appreciate you, but I just don't know any other company that does this and spends a week giving their employees flowers and gifts and cards and, oh, you're so wonderful. They've got a great job. That's appreciation enough. And I've got enough to do. I don't need to be, if I'm going to be bringing flowers and gift cards, believe me, it's going to be going somewhere else. It's going to be going to my kids, Sunday school teachers, to the scout leaders, to the volunteer coaches, to all the people who don't get a penny for all the hard work they're doing in my kids' lives. That's where I'm sending the gifts. That's where I'm sending the cards and the flowers. And I do that stuff. Because that's important, and those are the people that I really focus on, and I appreciate the teachers. They get a fabulous salary. They can't be fired. They've got a cushy job. That should be appreciation enough. This is Betsy Hart. You're listening to It Takes a Parent, and frankly, this parent is probably going to cave when it comes to Parent Appreciation Week or Teacher Appreciation Week and do all this stuff, because let's face it, I don't really need to be a pariah at my children's school, and they've still got a couple more years there, so I'll suck up and play the game. Okay, moving right along in the heartbeat section of the show. You're listening to AM 1160 WYLL. And you know what? I am not known as an overly protective parent of my kids. It probably does not surprise you. Yes, I believe in bicycle helmets and seat belts and life jackets when my kids are on the water, and on it goes. But the panicked overprotectiveness that I see so many parents exhibit today toward their young children in particular really frustrates me. You know, and this is all the more so when I contrast it to what I observe too often during the teen years when things get really dangerous. I've seen parents who are just oblivious to or afraid to face head-on issues like their teens and sex, drugs, pornography on the web, driving irresponsibly, and on it goes. I'm especially tired, you know what, of parents rationalizing this hands-off approach during their child's most dangerous years because their child gets good grades. So what? Anyway, I'm convinced that too many of us, when the stakes are highest, back off the most. Now, this is not true for my friend Gail, and here names have been changed to protect the innocent and not so innocent. But here is her story. Gail and her husband, they are great parents. They've never been the helicopter sort. Most importantly, more than anyone else I know, Gail gets their children are, well, wonderful little sinners. She understands that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, as the Bible says. So when Gail's daughter, Sarah, high school junior, recently wanted to join a girl's sleepover at Jean's house after school dance recently, Gail said no. Now, she's a fun parent. She lets her kids do fun stuff, but she's just, I'm not sure I'm totally down on sleepovers, but she is. That's just her deal. Okay, fine. At the pre-dance party, so, you know, with all the girls and the parents, and they're all dressed up and getting their picture taken, the other kids were begging Gail to let Sarah join the after-dance sleepover. Gail stood around, not least of all because, well, she'd been a high school junior. In fact, she and I were classmates, and she knew what we all know, that after-dance sleepovers at best involved little sleep. At worst, they meant the girl snuck out and got into trouble after the exhausted host parents went to bed. Now, even Gail's husband in this case suggested that she change her mind. Gail said no. Personally, not sure I could have stood up against all that. But let me tell you something. She is so glad that she did. And this all just happened fairly recently. A week or so after the dance, it turned out that no sleepover ever existed. You know, I'm wondering, did the other parents even call the ostensible sleepover host parents ahead of time and say, hey, I understand you're having a girl's sleepover? Maybe then Jean's parents would have said, what are you talking about? But apparently that didn't happen. Where were these parents, I'd like to know? No. See, rather the girls and boys and alcohol had snuck into a parent's second home an hour away from the dance and partied the night away. Think of what the consequences to that could have been. Just think about it. When the owners of the second home, fortunately, they finally discovered what happened, of course, they rightly called every parent of a child involved to let them know what had transpired. Only guess what? One parent said, oh, we know. They had somehow, I guess, figured out where their child was at 1:30 in the morning. So, you know, we figured out where our boy was. It was their son. And we went and picked him up. I'm sorry, excuse me, what? And they didn't break up the party and alert the other parents? No, apparently not. Who wants to interfere and make judgment calls these days? Come on. Most interesting is that, in retrospect, Gail remembered that Sarah hadn't really pushed to join the sleepover nearly as much as the girls were begging Gail to let her join it. So Gail has little doubt that Sarah, who knew all about the plans, of course, was quietly relieved to hide behind her, quote, overprotective parents and stay out of a very dangerous situation. Now, that is what a mom and dad are for. You know what, friends? It really does take a parent. I am beginning to think that that is especially true during the teen years. And, you know, people will say, oh, come on, she's going to be in college in a year and a half. At some point, she has to be allowed to do these screw-ups, to screw up on her own, if you want to call it that. And, you know, she is going to be in college in a year and a half. And that's all the more reason to be particularly vigilant about this now and to stay on top of this situation and to get as many good habits into your kids as you can today, precisely because they're going to go off on their own all too soon. We don't have very much time with them. And if you don't want to look back and have those regrets, you want to know that you were a parent, a real parent. And, you know, my dad used to say, to be a good parent, you have to be part cop. Frankly, I think my parents should have been better cops when it came to me, but because they weren't, is partly why I suppose I know what goes on out there, and I intend and have been so far, I hope, a real good cop, or I try to be a good cop when it comes to my four kids, because I think sometimes we get so caught up in protecting them when they're little because somehow that salves our consciences about not doing so when they're older. It's easy to say put on your bicycle helmet. It's not so easy to say don't have sex outside of marriage. And by doing so much of the one, we kind of let ourselves off the hook of the latter. And you know what? That's a big mistake. So is being naive about what our kids are into and up to. They are wonderful, delightful, fabulous, much loved little sinners. They are sinners just like us. And moms and dads, we need to get that, and we need to be on top of it, and we need to be a parent. Next up on It Takes a Parent, we are talking about global warming. We just got through Earth Week. And how do we kind of fight back on the politics of this crazy agenda that's going to cost our kids? Stay with me when we talk to the new executive director of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation right here on It Takes a Parent, AM 1160 WYLL. Don't go away.
Get answers to the questions you've been afraid to ask.
Ask the Pastor with Pastor Gregory Dickow.
Weekday evenings from 5 to 6 on Chicago's Christian Talk.
AM 1160 WYLL.
Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Math. A quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Math. And that's why math is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around.
Before you decide to move out of Chicago, better check the stores where you're going to make sure they carry Matt's chocolate chip cookies. Matt's is sold in a lot of places, but they're not everywhere, like in California, for instance. So if you're offered a good job in California, better think it over. A career is one thing, but giving up Matt's chocolate chip cookies? Now that's serious.
A quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. And that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Yeah, that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Matt's.
Now Matt's cookies are available via Peapod delivery service.
Sorry, Mom, the dog ate your Mother's Day card. Do you really expect her to believe that? Of course not. But every year you wait until the last minute, then you get frantic and do something stupid like telling her you had an emergency appendicitis again or got shanghaied onto a trash barge bound for Rangoon. Don't do that. This year, just send Mom a Mother's Day e-card from crosscards.com. It's easy, it's fast, it's free, and you can even wait until the last minute. This Mother's Day, visit crosscards.com.
Columnist and commentator Betsy Hart sees parents who are tyrannized by experts, anxious and harried by their children to the point of misery, and she faults today's permissive parenting culture. In a critically acclaimed book, It Takes a Parent, how the culture of pushover parenting is hurting our kids and what to do about it. Betsy Hart, mother of four, presents a smart, refreshingly honest, and provocative argument for the crucial role of parents who lead rather than follow. Bill Bennett says of It Takes a Parent, I highly recommend it. Buy your signed copy now at betsysblog.com. That's betsysblog.com.
Do you ever look in the mirror and think that maybe while you work hard to exercise and be in shape, your face isn't reflecting how you feel inside? Acclaimed facial cosmetic surgeon Dr. Wafi Khanna and the folks at Skinsational Med Spa in Hinsdale can help. You can look more on the outside like you feel on the inside, vibrant, healthy, younger. You know about Botox for frown lines and Restylane to plump lips and facial folds, but they also offer photo rejuvenation. With no downtime, it removes most brown and red spots and improves dull complexions. There's microdermabrasion and pixel resurfacing to treat large pores and rough skin texture. But what's really incredible about all this? Just a little bit of investment on the outside can help you to better reflect your inner beauty and wellness. Now, I'm not going to give away any of my own secrets. I'm just going to tell you that I love the folks at Skinsational Med Spa. Call them now at 630-887-8180. That's 630-887-8180 or visit hannahmd.com.
If you love to travel, we've got a great deal for you. Go to 1160travel.com for some of the best travel rates online. Check out 1160travel.com, all courtesy of Chicago's Christian Talk, AM 1160 WYLL.
Welcome back to It Takes a Parent. This is Betsy Hart welcoming you on this Sunday afternoon. And you know what? We're talking a lot about religion on the show today, how Americans view it, what we're doing about it, maybe because it's just kind of a crazy time between all the political stuff going on, the swine flu, and all kinds of other things that are happening. Maybe it's time to sort of assess where are we as a country when it comes to the issue of God. So we're just talking about the Pew Research Center and the fact that a recent study out just last week shows that we're a relation of a nation of religion changers. And I think, you know, there's some, purely from a secular perspective, there is some good things to be said about that. Now, interestingly, Kathleen Falsani, she's a religion writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, which happens to be my paper, but in any event, she wrote an interesting column also having to do with some Pew Research study material on the difference between women and men when it comes to God. And she writes, the difference between men and women, the humorist Dave Barry says, is that if given the choice between saving the life of an infant or catching a fly ball, a woman will automatically choose to save the infant without even considering if there's a man on base. We are, men and women, essentially different. She notes that in 2003, scientists at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Washington University in St. Louis boiled down the genetic difference between human males and human females to 78 genes. Following year, Dean Hammer, a molecular biologist at the National Institutes of Health, published The God Gene, How Faith is Hardwired into Our Genes, which proposed a genetic explanation for human spirituality, that people are essentially hardwired to seek a higher power or believe in God. Now, by the way, for us Christians, that shouldn't bother us at all. Of course we are, because God made us. So not a problem. If we're hardwired, you know, some people say, oh, you know, this is just saying that it's just all about genetics and genes and that somehow goes against true spirituality. Uh-uh, not if that's the way God made us. Totally fits with everything that totally consistent seems to me with Scripture. Anyway, Falsani goes on to write that a single gene, I can't even, the blah, blah, blah gene, the VMAT2 gene, affects brain chemicals and in turn affect people's spirituality. Hamer theorized, and that prayer, meditation, or sitting quietly can actually change the brain and our sense of spiritual experience. Isn't that interesting? While reading through some of the results of the U.S. Religious Landscape Survey, again from the Pew Research Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life, an extensive study, they interviewed maybe 30,000 people, she writes that she couldn't help but wonder about the connection between gender, genetics, and spirituality. And doesn't that kind of fit with a lot of what we find when you're in a church, regardless of whether or not the leadership is male? I'm going to get back to that because I think this really impinges on it. But aside from that, you do tend to find that women in general tend to have a more spiritual orientation. They tend to be more spiritual beings. You'll often hear Christian women saying it's very hard to find a really solid Christian guy, et cetera, et cetera. So it just kind of fits with a lot of our experience, with anecdotal experience, I think. So anyway, according to the Pew Survey, there's a significant statistical difference between how men and women think about God and relate to religion. For instance, when asked if they believe in God or a universal spirit, 77% of women said they did, whereas only 65% of men answered yes to the same question. It's still a lot. There's still a large percentage of both, but nonetheless, there's a difference. 66% of women said they pray at least daily. Only 49% of men do. This is really interesting. 86% of women and 79% of men said they are affiliated with a religion. Not such a huge difference there. 63% of women say religion is very important in their lives, but only 49% of men said the same thing. 58% of women and 45% of men said they have an absolutely certain belief in a personal God. And 44% of women said they attend worship services at least weekly, but just 34% of men said they do. And, you know, how often do you see a single woman sitting in church with kids because she can't get her husband to go with her? How often do you see a single guy sitting in church with his kids because he can't get his wife to go with him? And you don't see the second one so much. You do see the first quite a bit, quite a bit. And why is it that most times when if women run into a really, you know, spiritual Christian guy, oh, my gosh, it's just the greatest thing. Not always sure that men think the same thing about women. So Kathleen Falsalani goes on to talk about all this. And it's intriguing to me, especially as a parent to one son and three girls. And in many ways, I think my son is the most spiritual, maybe probably because he's just the oldest. But very, very intriguing to look at this. I'm going to be posting on my website, betsysblog.com. It's betsysblog.com. So make sure to visit there for all you parents out there. This is very intriguing, especially if you have sons and daughters. Anyone who spent much time around any house of worship, Falsani writes, can tell you that these statistics ring true. So if men and women are so different when it comes to spirituality, why? It's a longstanding pattern, said John Green. This is the fellow I talked to. So in the earlier segment, for as long as people have done surveys of religion, they have found that women have a different approach to religiosity than men do. No doubt it has something to do with gender. Okay, right. Whether that's something innate with being male or female or with the socialization of men, you know, who knows? But there's something going on there that has to do with gender. Socialization could very well explain the differences in religious practice between the genders. You know, men are sort of raised to be a little tougher, a little more independent. You know, women tend to be a little more social, a little more engaged, a little more all about cooperating inside organizations. As Falsani writes, that's true whether it's a house of worship or a book club. The men are, okay, that's true. And that greater sociability with regard to churches and religious organizations results from the fact that women are more intimately involved in families and, you know, and on it goes. So as Falsani also says, it doesn't quite explain why women are more likely to believe in God than men. But one idea is that it's a byproduct of this greater social connectedness. Women may be more likely to pick up on the things that those organizations believe, religious doctrine and belief in the divine and so forth. So then they go on, you know, this is where they get a little off base, I think, which leads to another question, which came first, the belief in God or the religiosity? I argue that, you know, God came first. But in any event, so here's the intriguing thing to me about this. You generally find that in organizations that that promote sort of right socialization of men, that when women take them over, they pretty much get destroyed. And here's where how this all fits together. So stay with me here. For instance, you look at the military, right? It used to be that the military was truly a male-dominated organization, as I would argue it ought to be. We ought not to voluntarily send our women off to fight wars. They ought to be in support positions because that's what a civilized society does. And in a civilized society, men protect women. Well, nonetheless, we've had all this feminization of the military and the military academies and so on. And so now we really are having recruitment problems. We're having trouble getting good recruits. We're having trouble getting good male recruits. And it used to be, well, let me back up. My theory is that men, of course, I'm not going to be able to argue with this. They tend to be more competitive, more aggressive, physically stronger. And that when it comes to a man, if those things are not rightly channeled to protect country, to protect family, to protect children, very often they're going to be wrongly channeled and they're going to get in trouble and they're going to end up in jail, which is why our jails are overwhelmingly filled with men who are not married, by the way. That's just, I don't think that's really rocket science. So it used to be that the military served this amazing purpose where we take a lot of guys who may well have gone off in the wrong direction otherwise, and it gave them a place to use that aggressiveness, to use that competitiveness, to use their physical strength to a good end. It really civilized a lot of guys who might otherwise have gotten into trouble. Not so much lately because it's dominated or more and more, it's not dominated, but it is more and more women are now very much spread throughout the military. They're allowed to do almost everything the guys are. So guess what? There's no longer an attraction for a lot of guys to go into the military and sort of say, hey, it's cool and it's tough, because it's not cool and tough anymore because there's so many girls there. Now, I realize a lot of people are going to have a, you know, fit about me saying that, but and the military is about protecting America, and we don't need to use it as a sociological engineering organization. Okay, maybe that's all true, but the reality is that has been one of its purposes or one of its side purposes for a long time, and it's no longer serving that purpose because it no longer is as attractive to men as a, frankly, male macho bonding organization. And I think the same thing is happening in a lot of churches. Now, we can argue all day long about what Scripture says about whether or not women should be in roles of leadership in the church. I believe Scripture teaches clearly that they should not. And whatever you want to come to with the Scripture, the bottom line is it's really about ego, isn't it? Because Jesus, or Paul said about Jesus, Christ, who was in very nature God, did not regard equality with God something to be grasped. So if Christ can lay down his right to his godly throne for us, who are we women to say, oh, I won't serve unless I have a title of deaconess, or I have a title of elder, or I can be a pastor in front of people and tell them what I think about things. Who cares? Just serve. Who cares what the title is? Find a place to teach. Find people to reach. Find ways to help other people. Who cares if you get this title? It's all about ego. And I'm not talking about in our culture where we want men and women to have equal rights and civil rights. Absolutely. I'm talking about in our churches. And what I've seen is that in every single church that has allowed women to come into positions of leadership in the mainline Protestant churches and some conservative churches, some more conservative evangelical churches are starting to go that way too, it inevitably hurts the church. There's just no exception to that, that I know of. It doesn't mean the churches that prohibit women from preaching always do well and thrive, but there's very little, it's very hard to argue with the fact that those that allow women into positions of leadership tend then to become weaker. I think the reason is they no longer become a place where men feel they are called to leadership, where there's a strong male leadership presence that they can look up to, that can help channel them, channel that aggressiveness, that competitiveness, that sense of wanting to use those gifts. They can no longer use them, at least in the church, in a right way. They can no longer look up to a strong male leadership. Typically, you find in churches that allow women to become elders and teachers that typically that male leadership becomes weaker and weaker, so then new men don't have that leadership to look up to. And pretty soon, it's a church dominated by women. The guys don't feel they have a big role to play there. And boy, does that affect their spirituality and affects our culture, too. And you can look at how the black churches are so dominated by women, and that is in particular, and that is not healthy. But we see that throughout evangelicalism. And I think that speaks to one reason guys aren't as likely to pursue and believe in God, because they don't see a strong male leadership in so many churches that they can be attracted to and in which they can grow and flourish. So, just my thought on the heartbeat part of the show. Hey, come right back. I've got lots more for you. You're listening to It Takes a Parent.
Hi, I'm Larry Morrow, announcer for Truth for Life. Listen to Pastor Alistair Begg weekday mornings at 7:30 right here on AM 1160 WYLL.
AM 1160 WYLL.
Friends, you know how important physical fitness is, not just to your physical, but to your emotional health and well-being. So then how is your New Year's resolution to get or stay fit going for you? Well, mine is off to a great start thanks to Elite Fitness in Western Springs. Conveniently located in the western suburbs, Elite Fitness offers state-of-the-art weights and cardio and weightlifting machines, along with great personal training. Now with their new expanded facilities, there's room for all your fitness needs. But what I love most are the classes. Elite offers a wide range of spin, Pilates, strong, boxing, total body fitness classes, and more, and their instructors are great. For the first time in my life, I'm regularly going to fitness classes several times a week. I'm having fun, I'm in better shape than ever, and when I take a class in the morning, I have a sense of added well-being that lasts throughout the day. Hey, maybe I'll see you there. Join now or find out more at EliteFitnessWS.com. That's EliteFitnessWS.com. Calling all campers and mom and dad, that's you too. This is Betsy encouraging you to enjoy the time of your family's life at Take Wise Family Camp in Branson, Missouri this summer. Choose your 6 days of solid Christian teaching and fun activities for the whole family in a beautiful Hawaii-like resort environment. My kids and I love it, so we're headed back this summer. Check out KQY Family Camp, part of the Kanakuk family of Christian sports camps, by going to my website, betsysblog.com. KQY, a family vacation with eternal significance.
If you own your own business and want to let people know about it, then advertise it on this show. It Takes a Parent reaches thousands of moms and dads all over the Chicagoland area. Nationally syndicated columnist, author, and radio show host, Betsy Hart, can tell everyone about your product or business on her show. Let Betsy's advertising team of experts come out to meet you for a free consultation. Introductory rates available for a limited time. Call 847-472-8942. 847-472-8942. That's 847-472-8942.
Get answers to the questions you've been afraid to ask.
Ask the Pastor with Pastor Gregory Dickow.
Weekday evenings from 5 to 6 on Chicago's Christian Talk.
Welcome back to It Takes a Parent, AIM 1160 WYLL. This is Betsy Hart. Hey, I hope you visit my blog, betsysblog.com. And if you haven't already, get your tickets to come see me, I hope, at the University Club of Chicago, Wednesday the 6th. And all about, I can get tickets on my blog, betsysblog.com. So, finding love in a recession. This is, you know, I talked about the recession, particularly as how it affects our kids and how it can be a real positive thing for them. But guess what? They don't just suddenly get to get everything that they're asked for, right? Or that they're asking for. I personally love it. I keep threatening my kids that we're going to just start eating soup and crunchy bread. You know, did you see the Kit Kittredge movie when it came out last fall, before the stock market crash? And it's a very romanticized version of what went on during the Great Depression. And she's, I guess, an American Girl doll. I don't know. My girls have never been into the American Girl doll thing, which is, I'm told, incredibly lucky because those things are so bloody expensive. But so they've never been into that, which is fine with me. They like stuffed animals. That's where they do the whole nurturing thing. My girls have never played with dolls or been interested in dolls. So I don't know, maybe I'm just doing something wrong. But in any event, we did go see the Kit Kittredge movie, which is real cute. And real romanticized version of the Depression. But I like, in the movie, Kit Kittredge has to start raising chickens to sell their eggs for money and so forth, and she's all horrified at this. I'm always threatening my children and that we're going to start living like Kit Kittredge did. I have actually, you know, they're a little bit concerned about things, and I think it's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. Let them be concerned. I think that's good for them. Anyway, so lots of things going on with families when it comes to the recession. We've talked about that. This is an interesting aspect. I couldn't help but bring this up on It Takes a Parent, maybe because I'm a single parent. The stock market slump may be contributing to a surge in online dating. Now, that's not me, but this is interesting nonetheless. Quote, on days when the Dow went down by 100 points, we found an increase in our site users relative to when the Dow increased by 100 points, says John Gonzaga, a senior research scientist for the dating website eHarmony. And I can go ahead and put this on my blog because I think it is real interesting. It's on the website of U.S. News and World Reports by Emily Brandon. And I saw something recently about this, too. It was on AOL, I think. And that site also saw a 20% spike in users between September 2008 and January 2009. How about that? Compared to the same time period a year prior. People may not always immediately make the connection between an external stressor, such as the state of the economy, and their close relationships. But our survey shows that people who are stressed about the economy may be drawn to long-term relationships, even if they are not aware of it. Gonzaga says, you know, interestingly, I was talking to a friend of mine who happens to be a family law attorney, otherwise known as a divorce attorney. I don't know why they call them family law attorneys. It's about splitting up families, not creating families, but in any event. So I was talking to her, and I was asking her what had gone on with her practice. And she said she definitely saw, and her colleagues saw, a downturn last November, December, but that by January, business was booming, partly because some people who had put off divorce because it is so expensive, yeah, tell me about it, decided by January, they just didn't care. They couldn't live with each other, and they were going to go ahead and go forward with it, as well as a lot of times, as you know, money problems cause marriage problems. And people think that, mistakenly, that by just getting rid of the marriage, they can get rid of their problems. They don't typically realize they're going to take that problem into, they're going to just switch partners and have the same problems the next time around, but whatever, separate discussion. So anyway, I thought that was sort of interesting. In fact, you know, you'll hear I've heard both ends of this. Some divorce attorneys will say that business is down because it's so expensive. People are just sucking it up and living in the same house, or even deciding potentially to work it out rather than get divorced because they would lose so much money in a divorce. Other people, it's causing stress and creating problems, and people aren't handling their money well, and so it's actually creating divorces. So maybe it all evens out in the end. But nonetheless, the dating sites are apparently doing really well in this economy. So these people are drawn to long-term relationships. She writes, long-term relationships where couples share living expenses often save both parties money, but Gonzaga says it is not what is fueling this trend. Companionship, not financial stability, is what appeals to the most about being in a long-term relationship. He says, quote, close relationships help people cope with stress, so we gravitate toward finding and maintaining them when times are tough. I think some people, you know, you sort of have a history at least of, I don't know, some men not wanting to get married or commit until they can provide for the family and that kind of thing. So I'm not sure about all that. And I think sometimes you get into those close relationships and then again, the money can create a whole lot of problems. But nonetheless, that's sort of encouraging in the tough times. People want to find somebody. People want to find somebody to share it with, or at least certain people do. Another popular dating website, this is Gonzaga Goes On, Match.com, has also seen business booms at most as most other sectors of the economy slump. Membership grew 17% in December. Interestingly, Match.com's fastest growing demographic is Americans age 50 and older. That I have heard that before. That's interesting. Who currently make up 20% of all members. People say they are using online dating because the economy is so bad, says Whitney Casey, a relationship insider. That really is her job title, apparently, an author of The Man Plan, Drive Men Wild, Not Away. Interesting. So I guess the idea is you can kind of just email each other and talk on the phone instead of going to spend money on, I don't know, going out having dinner or whatever. So anyway, that's how the recession is affecting the dating world. Really interesting to see how this recession is affecting different aspects of society and how it's affecting our culture and how we think about things and what we think is important. And I have no problem sort of reevaluating all my stuff and having my kids reevaluate their stuff and finding out what is important and what is worth, you know, what's worth getting excited about and what's worth kind of shrugging our shoulders and say, you know what, maybe we don't need to do that. That's a waste of money. Maybe this other thing over here is really worth doing. And I tend to be somebody who really cherishes experiences over stuff. So I'm the type who would still go on a vacation, but I would give up buying a new outfit or a couple of new outfits. I tend to like experiences, and experiences that enhance relationships. And I'm finding that in this recession, those are the things that I still cherish, that I'm still willing to do. You know, my kids are off to family camp at Kennecott Camps this summer because I just love that so much, and those relationships are so important. And when you get older, you can always, or the recession goes away, you can always go back and buy the outfit or the car, whatever it is, that kind of thing. But you know what? You can't go back and get that time back with your kids or with someone you love. And so I tend to find this recession has made me realize the relationships are really what matter. So, I don't know, maybe I'm not too far away from some of these folks who are getting more involved in online dating because they want that relationship. Now, speaking of relationships, I don't know about you all, but did you see the news about Mel Gibson this week? I have to say, I was so sad. So, and for those of you who are the uninitiated, Mel Gibson, of course, who produced The Passion of the Christ, really, you know, phenomenal film and all that. And here he is, really is sort of was seen at some levels a moral leader in Hollywood. Has left his family and has a girlfriend. Now, you know, a couple of things here. Apparently he and his wife have been, of 29 years and seven children later, have been separated for about 3 years. So I'm not really clear on which event led up to which, and were they separated for a long time and decided the marriage would end, and then he went out and met his girlfriend. I'm not clear on all that. But here's what I am clear on, that the long-term marriage is over. There is a younger girlfriend involved, at least right now. Separation's been going on for some time. His wife just filed for divorce. And Mel Gibson, whom I like, so he turns up on the red carpet with this Oksana Grigorieva, I guess is her name. They're very involved and have been for some time, and he's now being very open with her. And the wife only filed for divorce 2 weeks ago. I guess the children, according to news reports, are very angry and are not speaking to him. And as the news reports say, more than 2 weeks after his wife filed for divorce, Mel Gibson, or just 2 weeks, I guess they should say, filed for divorce, Mel Gibson and girlfriend Oksana Grigorieva, am I saying that right, made their first public appearance at the X-Men Origins Wolverine screening Tuesday, holding hands. A 53-year-old actor in a black suit, and Grigorieva, 38, this is according to one of the celebrity websites, did not stop to pose for photographs, instead rushing inside the Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. As Us Weekly previously reported, Grigorieva is a Russian singer who signed on the label Icon Records and blah, blah, blah. The two got close in the Massachusetts set last summer, but always tried to be discreet about their relationship. And, you know, so now his wife just filed, 29 years, just filed for divorce 2 weeks ago, and he's out on the red carpet holding hands with this gal. I mean, can he not just be even just a little bit discreet about this? And here's what really, really gets me about this. Do you remember in 2006, Mel Gibson was pulled over. He was drunk. And he went on sort of an anti-Semitic tirade with the police officer. And the police and people just went crazy. I mean, they were very upset about this and it was in all the news and so forth. You couldn't turn on the television set without hearing about this. And rightly so. Fair enough. That is absolutely fine. I mean, if this guy's going to put himself out there as some kind of a, you know, as a Christian believer and produce The Passion of the Christ, this phenomenal film, and wanting Hollywood to look at spiritual things and all this kind of stuff, and that's great. Then, for heaven's sake, you know, fine. If he's going to get in trouble like that, it's fair enough to make to look at that and to really dissect that and just say, hey, that's an outrage. So what bothers me is nobody is saying that this is an outrage. Nobody is saying, why did you leave your marriage of 29 years? If you are committed to the church, you're committed to a public Christian life, then you need to stay committed to your marriage. And whatever went on there, and it's not quite as clear because they've been separated for some time, you don't need to be out dating some girl, and you certainly don't need to be parading her around in front of your ex-wife and your 7 children who are apparently outraged at you 2 weeks later. I find that outrageous, and I don't mean to suggest that people aren't weak, that we couldn't all fall into any kind of awful sin, that we can judge. I'm not going down any of those roads. This is ultimately between him and God, and I'm not going to get involved in that as far as what's personally going on. I'm just saying publicly, why aren't people more outraged about this and holding him accountable? Out of care for the guy and out of care for the guy's family, because we don't want to make value judgments. We'll make it in a drunken tirade, anti-Semitic tirade, fine, fair enough. But when it comes to a family breaking up and a guy being very public about a new young girlfriend just right after his wife has filed for divorce, boy, don't want to make value judgments about that. You know what? I'm going to make a value judgment. I think it stinks, and I think he shouldn't be doing this, and I think at the very least he should be discreet and show some care for his family. So I'm going to go ahead and make a value judgment, because you know what? That's kind of what I like to do here on It Takes a Parent. AIM 1160 WYLL's is Betsy Hart saying, don't go away. Come right back.
If you love to travel, we've got a great deal for you. Go to 1160travel.com for some of the best travel rates online. Check out 1160travel.com, all courtesy of Chicago's Christian Talk, AIM 1160 WYLL.
Do you know that a huge percentage of illnesses are because of stress? I believe it. Look, I used to think a massage was a rare luxury to be enjoyed only on a vacation or for a special occasion, but no more. Not since I've been going to Massage Envy in Western Springs. Now, massage is an affordable, regular part of my wellness program. Massage Envy of Western Springs will show you how consistent massage can lower blood pressure and stress, improve your circulation, and make you feel oh so good. And in these tough times, you need something to affordably feel good about. Massage Envy is open late, so you can go after the kids are in bed, or you can walk in anytime. Your first massage is only $49, and a membership at one Massage Envy is good at them all. My Massage Envy in Western Springs is a little oasis for me. And for this single mom of four, it's not a luxury, it's a necessity. Call 708-784-ENVY. That's 708-784-ENVY to book your first massage.
Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Matt, a quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Matt, and that's why Matt is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around.
Most things today seem to be mass production and speed. In the big cookie companies, for instance, the cookies race along at 35 miles an hour so they can keep up with production. But at Matt's, we do things nice and slow. That's because it takes longer to make Matt's cookies with all natural ingredients instead of artificial ones. But while Matt's cookies may be made slow, boy, do they get eaten up fast.
A quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. And that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Yeah, that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around.
Matt's. Now Matt's cookies are available via Peapod Delivery Service.
Tune in to the radio ministry of Elgin Evangelical Free Church this Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pastor Elliot Anderson invites you to be discipled through God's Word through this broadcast and invites you to join them this Sunday at 10:30 a.m. to continue in your discipleship. Pastor Anderson is a graduate of Judson University in Elgin, and this broadcast is made possible thanks to the folks at Judson University. For more information about Elgin EFC, visit elginefc.org or call 847-659-8812.
Calling all campers, and Mom and Dad, that's you too. This is Betsy encouraging you to enjoy the time of your family's life at Take Wise Family Camp in Branson, Missouri this summer. Choose your 6 days of solid Christian teaching and fun activities for the whole family in a beautiful Hawaii-like resort environment. My kids and I love it, so we're headed back this summer. Check out Take Wise Family Camp, part of the Kanakuk family of Christian sports camps, by going to my website, betsysblog.com. Take Wise, a family vacation with eternal significance.
AM 1160.
Welcome back to It Takes a Parent, AM 1160 WYLL. This is Betsy Hart. Hey, friends, I'd love for you to visit betsysblog.com. That's betsysblog.com. And there you can find out all kinds of fun stuff. In particular, I would love to see you at a talk I'm giving here in Chicago at the University Club on May 6th. It's a luncheon, and you can go even if you are not a member of the University Club in Chicago. It tells you where to get your tickets and how to do that. So I'm hoping to see a whole bunch of you folks at that luncheon. It's May 6th, Wednesday, a lunch at the University Club in Chicago. So you can find out about that on betsysblog.com. You can visit my sponsors, all kinds of other fun stuff. So I hope you will stop by there. Now, one of the things I'm going to be posting there is something a friend of mine sent me today. It comes from the Rick Warren, The Purpose-Driven Life. It's the Purpose-Driven Connection, the daily devotional. It's about stress, and I thought this was really interesting. In our devotion series, Pastor Rick Warren discusses the Bible passages that inspire him the most. Today's devotional is based on this passage. Jesus said to his followers, go everywhere in the world and tell the good news to everyone. Now, then what Warren talks about is how a lot of people are on overload and headed for a crash. Consider these statistics among U.S. citizens. This is very interesting, friends. Listen up. People now sleep 2.5 fewer hours each night compared to people from 100 years ago. 2.5 hours. And this makes sense because before electricity, you know, the candle goes out, it's dark, it's late, you go to bed. I mean, you're done. So as a result, and I've heard this before, that they used to sleep on average 10 hours a night. Can you believe that? So they were getting great night's sleeps, or at least they were in their beds all night. The average work week is longer now than it was in the 1960s. The average office worker has 36 hours of work piled up on his or her desk. It takes 3 hours a week just to sort through it and find what we need. He goes on with these statistics, and again, this is from the Purpose-Driven Connection, a daily devotional, and this is from yesterday's April 22nd. We spend 8 months of our lives, I mean, this is distressing. We spend 8 months of our lives opening junk mail, 2 years of our lives playing phone tag with people who are too busy to answer. Oh, my gosh. And 5 years waiting for people who are trying to do too much and are late for meetings. I'm not sure I'm really going with all those numbers there, but it's definitely it's a lot of time we're wasting. We're piled on, stretched to the we are a piled on, stretched to the limit society, chronically rushed, chronically late, chronically exhausted. Many of us feel like Job did when he said, "I have no peace, I have no quiet, I have no rest." No, Job sounds like a mother of young children there, but in any event, and trouble keeps coming. Overload, Warren writes, comes when we have too much activity in our lives, too much change, too many choices, too much work, too much debt, too much media exposure. Amen, brother. Dr. Richard Swenson says, he writes, the conditions of modern living today devour margin. If you're homeless, we direct you to a shelter. If you're penniless, we offer you food stamps. If you're breathless, we connect you to oxygen. But if you're marginless, in other words, you have no time on the edges to smell the roses, we give you one more thing to do. Have you ever heard that expression? Want something done? Ask a busy person to do it. Marginless is being 30 minutes late. Oh, this is, I don't even want to, you know, even this is my life. So I'm being convicted here as I'm reading this. Marginless is being 30 minutes late to the doctor's office because you were 20 minutes late getting out of the hairdresser. Because you were 10 minutes late dropping the children off at school because the car ran out of gas 2 blocks from the gas station and you forgot your purse. That's marginless. No, that would be an occasional description of my life. You need margin in your life when you're not hurrying and worrying all the time. You have to think. Time to relax. Time to enjoy life. Time to be still and know that God is God. And that's from Rick Warren, of course, founding pastor of Saddleback Church in Lake Forest, California. You know, I love thinking through these issues. And the fact is I've never actually had an original thought in my life, but I like delving into other people's really interesting thoughts about these issues. And when I read this, several came to mind. And one was the concept, the reality that how we define stress today and how it was defined 100 years ago is surely very different. I mean, 100 years ago, you just weren't sure if you were going to make it through childbirth and if all of your children were going to grow up to adulthood. I mean, most of the time they didn't. You just, babies died. Women died so constantly in childbirth that until the 1930s, it was very difficult for them, a woman of childbearing age, to even get life insurance, for instance. It's only within the last century that was something we survived on a routine basis. If you lived out in the farmland, you know, far out in the plains or in the western plains, and there wasn't water, there wasn't good rain, your family might starve to death. I mean, that was real stress. People died all the time. There were no antibiotics. You could just easily get a death sentence from the most simple of illnesses. Babies died. You didn't know if you're going to be able to feed your family. That was real stress. The idea of running late to an appointment, ostensibly, that's not real stress, or maybe it shouldn't be. It is in my life. I get stressed out by that stuff. So believe me, I'm guilty of this too. I'm just saying that compared to the stress of living and dying, what we experience now for the most part, in the United States at least, is not what should probably be on that stress meter. And yet, it remains the case that real depression rates are up about 10 times since the 1950s. And this is not just because it's better reported and there's less stigma. It really is significantly up. Most researchers agree that they may disagree in the amount, but most agree that it is stress. Definitely it has increased, and so have depression rates significantly. And one of the thoughts about this, and Martin Seligman, who's a happiness researcher, talks about this. It's very interesting. He says there's several key things. One is consumerism. One is this hedonistic treadmill we're on. We always want more. We're just, by definition, live in a culture we're not satisfied with what we have, no matter how much it is. We begin to think that we just need more. So wherever we're at, we always got to have more. That keeps us stressed out and on the treadmill. But one of the things he notes that really strikes me is that we just don't have the networks, the social networks, and the sense of belonging to community that we used to. We are very much an individualistic society. It's very much all about me. So my successes and my failures then take on this huge importance, whereas we used to be in very large, extended, well-networked families who, for the most part, lived fairly close to each other. We certainly had strong communities with strong moral bases, and we had strong social ties in our churches. There were webs that we were part of. So if we failed over here in our little part of the web, if we experienced a failure, the larger web might still be going strong. In fact, they probably were. So our failure, Seligman said, did not take on this huge import that they do now. In the same way, our successes were also just one part of the web. So we didn't put as much importance into them, because if we had a huge success, somebody else might not be in our web of influence, might not be having that same success. And so it tempered our sense of how preservative that was, if you want to put it that way. We were part of a web, and we rose and fell together, but had that support structure and that sense of, it's not all about me. My successes and my failures are not just about me. My successes and my failures need to be shared and part of a larger community. And so it really insulated us from a lot of the stress that goes with modern living in a very, very individualistic culture. And how this translates, I think, into the church, and I've talked about this with the book Christless Christianity by Michael Horton, is he believes that in modern evangelicalism, we have, again, become very me-centered. It's not How do I glorify God? How do I fit into His web of what He is doing in the world? Even if I can't see it or understand it, how can I ask God to use me in that web to glorify Him, to glorify His purposes and His missions and His goals and what He wants to do with my life? That is less and less the question that we are asking. And it's the right biblical question to ask, Horton says, but it's less the question we modern evangelicals are asking more and more. In a whole lot of churches, we are asking, what can God do for me? How can He help my relationships? How can He help my job? How can He help my kids? How can He help me to be happier and more productive? We're not asking, how do I forget all that stuff? Maybe it's not God's purpose that I be happy and productive in this life, or at least not happy in this life, or content in the way I think I should be. Maybe it's His purpose that I do something else entirely, and how do I give myself all over to His purposes? Instead, we've become a very me-centered Christianity, and I think that's where a lot of stress comes from, too. Because once you're me-centered, if me isn't doing real well, me's got a real problem, and it's easy to get stressed out. Instead of saying, God, how do I fit into Your mission for what You want of my life? And then we know, hopefully, that God does get it right. And we can trust Him with that, and I think that that can help to take some of the stress off. So in the meantime, all I can tell you is go get a great night's sleep and think about fitting into God's mission, not how He can fit into yours. Friends, it has been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me on It Takes a Parent. This is Betsy Hart from all of us at the show saying have a great week, and we'll see you next time.